In my previous ministry, I used to travel quite a bit to various places to speak, and almost inevitably sitting beside someone on the plane, I'd get into a conversation. And after a few minutes, of course, especially if it was a man, the question would arise, and what do you do? And I would say, well, I'm a pastor. And there was usually about 3 or 4 seconds where I could visibly see the person replaying the last couple of minutes in their mind, asking themselves, did I swear? Did I say anything I shouldn't have? And then when they had, like, convinced themselves they were good, they would say, well, nice meeting you, and go back to bury themselves in their laptop or their phone, and wouldn't look my way for the rest of the flight usually. It used to frustrate me because obviously you hope to have a chance to share the gospel. I asked somebody about this once, and they told me that their response when they're sitting on a plane with someone, this is a pastor, was when they were asked the question, what do you do for a living? Their answer was, I make people eternally happy. That usually got their attention. And that usually started a deep and profound conversation. And I've never forgot that definition of Christian ministry. I make people eternally happy. And as we install new leaders in our congregation today, I thought it would be helpful for us to just take that big picture view of Christian leadership, Christian service. It's actually a true definition, really, of every Christian, right? You know, whether we are teaching Bible study, leading small groups, working with the little children, on mission, evangelism, whatever we're doing, ultimately, our great aim is to make people eternally happy. And I think it's really good on a morning when we're installing new office bearers to remind them, to remind us, that this is what we are all about. And so I want to use this verse to answer this question. What do elders and deacons do? What do elders and deacons do? And Paul really puts it here in a way that is true of all Christian leaders. We don't lord it over your faith, but we work with you for your joy. We work with you for your joy. That's our ultimate aim. Now, elders and deacons have lots of tasks and lots of duties and lots of responsibilities, but this is the ultimate aim of everything. We are working for your joy. Now, the background to Paul's verse here is that Paul was under a lot of attack in Corinth. He'd been there, he'd ministered to them, he'd left. False teachers had moved in and started making false accusations against him. And one of them was that because Paul had not come back to visit them for a while, Paul really had no interest in them. He had no love for them. He had no concern for them. And so Paul, in the previous verses here, is saying, it's true, I have not visited you for a while, but it's not because I don't desire your good, and it's not because I fear you or the false teachers. He says, I'm delaying coming because I want to give you time to put things right that are wrong. You can see that here. Verse 23, I call God to witness against me. It was to spare you that I refrained from coming again to Corinth. He's saying, I don't want to come and come down on you like a ton of bricks and cause you pain. I want to give you time and space to consider your actions and your words so that you come to repentance, and then I can come alongside you with joy and for your joy. So Paul is here defending his ministry and the ministry really of all who are in Christian leadership, Christian ministry, Christian service. So what do elders and deacons do? They work for our joy, but there's something they work for first, and it's this. They work for God's joy. Before they look at us and think, how can I work for the joy of the members of First Biden, they look up and they ask, how can I work for God's joy? Because God's joy must come above and before the joy of ourselves or of anyone else. And Paul here speaks of this in two ways. First of all, he says, God hates the abuse of authority. God hates the abuse of authority. He's delegated authority. As we laid hands on these brothers this morning, we recognized that God was setting them apart to be authorities in our lives, to be leaders in our lives. But Paul is aware that that authority, these positions of power and leadership, can be abused. Notice what he says in verse 24, not that we lord it over your faith. So Paul here is saying this is a temptation, this is a tendency. When anyone is ever given power, authority, influence, that they abuse it, that they begin to go beyond the bounds of their authority. And therefore, God has, in the Bible, given very clear limitations on the power of Christian leaders, pastors, elders, deacons. He has limited that power. He channels that power. He's saying, as long as you're exercising that authority within these biblical limits, I smile. You go beyond these limits. You make your rules, your opinions, your views, your preferences, your prejudices, the rules. That is lording it over the consciences of others. It's taking the place of God. It's setting God aside and saying, I know better. And therefore, this Paul is saying, When I'm leading you, when I am trying to direct you, I'm not doing it in a way that is an abuse of authority, as if I am a lord. No, there's only one lord. But that lord works through his servants to lead his people, and they please God as long as they operate within biblical limits. And therefore, our own personal preferences, ideas, hobby horses, they must not come into it. But only, how does God describe our roles, our responsibilities, our limitations, our responsibilities? And God calls you, brothers, to please him by working within these God-given boundaries and never going beyond them and becoming a lord over the consciences of others. God hates the abuse of authority. We see that, sadly, in many places today. It's a human tendency. It can come into the church that sometimes when people are given power, they become egomaniacs and megalomaniacs and begin to crush and oppress. God hates that. But there's also the other extreme that we see today. If there's abuse of authority on one side, there's the assertion of autonomy on the other side. That's the rejection of all authority. It's the independent spirit. No one's going to tell me what to do. I will do my own thing. Who do you think you are to give me guidance, to give me correction, to discipline me? Well, God hates that assertion of autonomy or self-rule. And this was a tendency of the believers in Corinth. They had embraced the spirit of the age, the hedonism, the I'll make myself happy, whatever mentality. And it was a spirit that had been encouraged by the false prophets in Corinth too. They had said, you know, this Paul, he's always coming with his rules and his restrictions and his demands. You follow us, you can do what you want. We're just going to make you happy all the time. We will support you in this. We won't ask what pleases God. We'll ask what pleases you. You be our guides, and we'll make things work and make things turn out. They were abdicating all authority. And as people will do, you do that, then they will take authority and be self-rulers, be autonomous, laws to themselves. So God hates the abuse of authority. God hates the assertion of autonomy. And what Paul is telling us here is that God is working for our happiness and calls us to work for the happiness of others in accordance with his word. If we aim for our own happiness and pleasure in abusing power, or in the assertion of self-rule, ultimately, no one will be happy. The leaders won't be happy, the led won't be happy, and God won't be happy. And therefore, Paul is saying to all of us, with any role of leadership, you must work for my joy first. You must keep your eyes looking up, saying, what will please God here? So let me not abuse authority. Let me not assert autonomy. It's God's smile we need first and most. And if we do, we will share in God's happiness. As we pursue God's joy, God's pleasure, that overflows into the lives of his people. He loves to reward those who are seeking his pleasure and happiness first. He rewards godly and faithful leadership in this world and in the world to come. He smiles upon it so that as we work for God's joy, we share in God's joy. God's joy first, our joy second. We work, elders and deacons work, all leaders work for God's joy. But how else do we get joy and give joy? Well, that's what Paul goes on to speak of here. In this shepherding role, he says, we are working for your joy. We work with you for your joy. And that's true in two ways. We work for your joy in this world, and we work for your joy in the world to come. So let's look at both of these. Paul is speaking about this here. We are about making people eternally happy, for sure. But we're also about promoting joy and happiness here below. And Paul can do this safely with the Corinthians because he says here, we work with you for your joy, for you stand firm in the faith. Now, it might seem a bit of a stunning statement that, given all the problems that were in Corinth, yet he sees that fundamentally they had laid a gospel foundation in their lives. They had received the grace of God so that they believed in Jesus and they repented of their sins and they loved Jesus and they served Jesus. And they wanted to tell others about Jesus. They had that firm foundation. Whatever was being built upon it was a bit shaky in places. But Paul, with his goodwill towards the Corinthians, says, look, when I look at you, yeah, I see problems, but I also see this. You've got that firmness underneath it all. We've got to fix some things that you've built, but I acknowledge you are firm in the faith. You're true believers. And with that, he says, because of that, we can work for your joy. You've got the basis right. Now let's build upon that. And so we want to ask today, how do elders work for our joy? And how do deacons work for our joy? And of course, this is a charge to our elders and deacons, new and existing. But I hope you'll see it's also a charge to ourselves. In the sense of, number one, we all have some kind of leadership role, whether it's parents of children, whether it's an older student with younger students that look up to them and see their example, whether it's being a teacher, whether it's being a friend, whether it's working in the church in some role, whatever it is, to some degree or other, we all have this role, we all have this responsibility of working for joy. But also, it's a charge to us in terms of submitting to our elders and deacons as they work for our joy. So let's hear, first of all, what is it that the elder does, first of all? What does the elder do to work for our joy? Well, first of all, he models for us. The elder is, before he does anything, he has to be something. He has to be a model of virtue and godliness. Yes, he has gifts, but above all, he's got to have character. He's got to have a Christ-likeness that will be an example and an inspiration to others. So that's the first charge to our elders, to be a model. Secondly, they are to be teachers. One of the roles given to elders in the Bible is to teach others and oversee the teaching of others. And therefore, as they go about this work of teaching in Sunday schools, catechism classes, small group leaders, even just one-on-one, and as they oversee the preaching in this church, what's at the back of their minds all the time? How can I work for the joy of God's people here? We know that joy cannot come from falsehood, from unbiblical teaching, but only from true teaching. So that is a big aim, to be a teacher and an overseer of teachers. And then elders are to be praying. They are modeling, they are teaching, and they are to be praying. Praying for the whole church, praying for their district that they have and the small group leaders that are under them. Praying for the families and individuals that are in their lists. Praying especially for those with special needs. They are to encourage prayer as well as model prayer. Then fourthly, they are to be shepherds. That involves knowing the sheep. That involves bringing counsel and guidance to the sheep or providing that from an expert, a professional. Involves protecting the sheep and feeding the sheep and sometimes carrying the sheep. It involves going after wandering sheep, lost sheep, to bring them back. And as they do this shepherding, they are thinking all the time, it's for their joy. I'm here not as a shepherd, I'm not here for my own joy first and foremost, but theirs. So I will give up my time and my energy. I will make these calls. I will approach these sheep. Because I want their joy and I want their happiness. They are shepherds. Then they are governors. They are responsible for the holiness of the church and its members. And therefore they make decisions about who will become a new member in our church, how members should conduct themselves. One of the gravest, hardest jobs of the elder is church discipline. That in governing and leading God's people, at times we have to come with rebuke. Sometimes if that rebuke is not taken and acted upon, then there could be suspension from church privileges like the Lord's Supper and baptism. And ultimately, if somebody abandons the faith altogether, then excommunication. These are awful, awful things to deal with. They are incredibly stressful. But again, this governing is ultimately for the joy of the people. They see when sheep are straying that they're straying into dangerous, depressing, treacherous areas. And they see that at the end of that pathway, a continued lifestyle like that, is darkness and sadness and death. And they say, hard though it is, we have to speak truth and we have to bring down sometimes sanctions to impress upon the sheep the importance of a holy life. So they govern and they lead. They try and look down the path, the road, and see the opportunities as well as the challenges that are facing the church. They try and have a long-term view. They're not just thinking about today or next Sunday, but what will this result in 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line? Where is our congregation going? Where is our federation going? And what steps do we need to take to lead, to envision a future that is full of holy happiness for God's people? So, it's demanding, isn't it? But in all this, modeling, teaching, praying, shepherding, leading, governing, they're thinking the joy of God's people. What about deacons? How do deacons work for the joy of fellow Christians? Well, they do that by stewardship, which means the modeling of good money management and property management. They show by their example, they show by education, by teaching, by encouragement, by exhortation, what it means to handle money, property, assets, in a way that will please God. How to earn better, how to manage what we earn better, how to give better, how to leave a legacy in ways that are beneficial for those behind. Knowing that it's more blessed, it's more happy, it's more joyful to give than to receive. And so they're motivated not by we want your money, but no, we want your happiness. Stewardship. Then there's the collecting and allocating of money. Regular collections for operating expenses and many other ministries and needs in our community and our nation and beyond the nation. Helping to gather that, collect that, count that, distribute that, allocate it in ways that are pleasing to God and that will maximize the happiness of those who receive it. There's visiting. Elders are to visit, but so are deacons. Where there's need, where there's poverty, unemployment, sickness, our deacons will visit and talk with those in need to ascertain how they can best help them. Or maybe meeting with people who are in desperate money straits through their own fault sometimes, through mismanagement, through too much debt, through foolish expenditures, investments, and to try and educate and teach in how to have a budget, how to manage money, how to pay off debt, and so on. Our elders want that for you because they want your happiness. The opposite is a miserable experience, isn't it? So they visit, and they communicate. They keep us informed as to what is needed, as they did with Christian education recently. And then again, inform us when these needs are met with joy. And they do this because they want us to have the joy of seeing these budgets met and that money being spent on worthwhile things. So again, there's a lot for deacons to do, isn't there? A lot for elders, a lot for deacons. As they lead us, as they shepherd us, as they care for us. But all of this, all of the elders' tasks, all of the deacons' tasks are under this great umbrella as defined here by Paul. We work with you for your joy, for your joy here and now. But we also do it to work for your joy in the world to come. And sometimes that will involve making decisions that will temporarily at least reduce your joy here. Sometimes leaders have to make unpopular decisions. They have to say things, do things that are going to get criticism. Because the people who maybe hear them and are affected by them, they feel that there's a loss in their life as a result, whatever that may be. Nobody likes getting a correction, a rebuke, a redirection in their life, do they? None of us do. Our happiness is reduced by that. But the ultimate aim is happiness in the world to come. And sometimes that means that God will take away our happiness here. Because he would far rather us be happy forever than be falsely happy here. And that's what Paul is talking about here also. We work with you for your eternal joy, your forever joy, even if at times that means that reduces temporary, earthly joy. And therefore, this calls us, elders, deacons, anyone in leadership, to be a joy worker, to keep this in front of you. Sometimes the roles get demanding, the responsibilities are overwhelming, the difficulties are just so draining that we can sag, that we can lose our joy. But we can never give someone else joy if we don't have it ourselves. So we are to be joyful joy workers, aiming to keep our own joy full so that we can work to give others joy. Some of you will have heard of the great American leader, Jonathan Edwards, a pastor in New England, who is called America's greatest theologian many years ago. And he made 70 resolutions when he was a young man, a young leader. And one of them was this: resolved to endeavor to obtain for myself as much happiness in the other world as I possibly can, with all the power, might, vigor, and vehemence, yea, violence I am capable of, or can bring myself to exert in any way that can be thought of. He knew he needed this. He knew this would help him work long hours, face hard problems, recover from burnout. Resolved, he says, to endeavor to obtain for myself as much happiness as possible. And therefore, in all our duties, all our hours, all our decisions, let's remember it's about making God happy and then others happy. And that will be our happiness too. So be a joy worker. Mothers, fathers, teachers, Sunday school teachers, catechism teachers, those who lead small groups, those who lead all the ministries in our church, cadets, GEMs, whatever it is, be a joy worker. You're working for their joy. And be a co-worker with these joy workers. As your elders approach you, as your deacons make contact with you, they're not coming to threaten you. They're not coming to bully you or intimidate you. They're coming to give you happiness. So respond to their calls, their texts. Don't get scared when they approach you. You know, we really want to help your joy. And that's why Paul says here, we work with you for your joy. There's a witness here. There's a co-working. It's not something that you're to be passive in, but active in. So why don't you approach your elders or your deacons and say, make me happy. Teach me something. Correct me. Counsel me. Help me to be a better giver, steward. Help me to be a better teacher. Help me to be a better father, a better mother. Because I know this will work for my joy and the joy of those I serve. So be a co-worker. We work with joy for joy. So we ask, what do elders and deacons do? Elders and deacons are joy workers. So are pastors, so are Christians. We are joy workers. So let's do that. Let's work for joy. And, of course, let's submit to this leadership as well. As we model what it is to be a joy worker, we're actually modeling Jesus. He is the greatest office bearer. He was the perfect elder and the perfect deacon, the perfect leader in every role and responsibility he had. And he too, why did he do it? We're told in Hebrews, for the joy that was set before him. And that joy was not just his own, but his people's joy. He is our greatest model of this. He is the joy worker. And therefore, let's be inspired by him and follow him in this way. And let's submit to joyful leadership. As our elders, deacons, pastors, others exercise this leadership in a joy-filled, joy-giving way, let's welcome it. Let's receive it. Let's submit to this leadership for God's joy, their joy, and our joy. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, you were and you are the most joyful office bearer. Therefore, please share your joy with us and through us as we serve you and your people in this world. Amen.